What's going on, everyone? Welcome to Seeking Excellence, where we apply faith and reason to the obstacles and opportunities of everyday life. Today's episode is going to be a great one here. I'm speaking at a men's conference next month in Guilford, Indiana, a place you've never heard of in your life, unless you know Father Jonathan Meyer at All Saints Parish. Father Meyer is an amazing man. He's a pastor. He's a good friend of mine, and he invited me to speak at their E6 men's conference, which you'll hear more about in a second. But today, Father Meyer and I are going to go through all types of issues facing men in the Catholic Church today. We talk about priesthood, we talk about married life, we talk about being a single man, we talk about being lonely as a man. And so if you're struggling as a man to live out your faith, or you know somebody who is, I encourage you to give this episode a listen and to really take to heart, you know, the things we share, the ways that we challenge men to take responsibility for their loneliness, to take ownership over their lives, over their spiritual lives. And we also recognize some of the ways the church has failed us over the years. And so we cover a lot in today's episode. I encourage you to go check out previous episodes of Father Meyer. I think this is his sixth time or something like that on the podcast. We've done a lot together. And so I'm excited to share him with you once again. So without further ado, let's get to it. All right, welcome back to Seeking Excellence. This is your boy, Nathan Crankfield, here with one of my best friends in the entire world, Father Jonathan Meyer.
Father Meyer, how are you doing? What is going on, my brother? It's very good to be with you. We were actually just together, in Seek, and you and your wife and your beautiful baby, and it's good to be now with you on Seeking Excellence.
It is. It's great to have you back. You know, it's been a while since we recorded together.
It's been way too long. I think there was a Trump rally the last time that I was on Seeking Excellence.
That was one of the first in-person recorded guest episodes we ever did together, or that I ever did was with you, which is really exciting. But yeah, great to have you back. We're going to be back together, all four of us, you, me, Jordan, and Emily, here in about a month, 5 weeks or something like that. We've got the E6 Men's Conference coming up, which I'm very excited about. Obviously, it is in one of the greatest counties in America, in Dearborn County. One of the greatest counties for Catholicism in the U.S. One of my favorite places to go, Guilford, Indiana, to East Central. Is that right?
That East Central High School. Right. East Central High School. The E6 Catholic Men's Conference coming up on none other than February 17th, the first Saturday after Ash Wednesday. Everybody in the entire nation should be coming on pilgrimage to Dearborn County, Indiana. We are celebrating 200 years of Catholicism. That's right. It's the bicentennial of Catholicism in Dearborn County. And we will be hosting the 9th annual E6 Catholic Men's Conference. E6, by the way, for those of you who are unfamiliar with, E6 is for Ephesians chapter 6, of putting on the armor of God. So we're trying to armor men up to live their faith. And we're just tremendously blessed with a legacy of great speakers and great opportunities for the sacraments, for men to gather and become saints.
I love it. Yeah, I'm very excited. You know, I've gotten to come to Dearborn County for several different events, just to visit you sometimes, but never gotten to be at the men's conference. And so I'm really excited to be there for that this year. And, you know, Emily would tell you this, and she would laugh at me for saying this, but I was having yet another, probably like my fifth in the last year, like crisis in, I told her, I was like, I'm having a quarter life crisis about what I'm doing with my life, just because I'm reading the book Boys Adrift by Dr. Leonard Sachs right now. I don't know if you've ever read it or heard of it, Father, but it's quite amazing. And it really just goes deep into the problem, the crisis of masculinity, the crisis of boyhood that we have going on in the U.S. right now. Around the world, in different countries, it's affecting people, but it's really, really hitting us hard here in the U.S. And Dr. Sachs goes over video games. He talks about pornography. He talks about changes in the school system. He talks about ADHD and specifically the medicine that we prescribe for that, especially to young boys. He talks about a number of different things, failure to launch and the rising number of men in their late 20s and 30s that are living at home and not getting jobs and have no motivation. And he talked about just a number of different things that could be causing this. And for me, I've just constantly felt this call to just go all in on forming men and helping to lead men and helping to inspire men And really, I mean, I've always debated this. I don't even know what this shift would look like of making Seeking Excellence specifically for men. I feel like, in a sense, I already kind of target that and create all the content in a way that is aimed towards that. But man, I want to write books on masculinity. I want to dive more into it. And so the men's conferences for me are just really important opportunities for me to be able to speak to men. I think when I've gone to men's conferences in the past, I did Baltimore's last year. I've done other ones. It's amazing how I'm often, 30 years younger than the next youngest speaker. And so it's cool to be able to be there and kind of have that young representation and hopefully draw more young men to come. But what is it for you? I mean, you work with a lot of men. Obviously, I think you live and operate in a unique place there in Dearborn County where you have, I think to an extent from what I've seen when I've been there, it's not untouched when it comes to progressivism and liberalism and some of the things that have emasculated and demasculinized a lot of society. But you do, I think, have a stronger culture of masculinity in Dearborn County. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree. When I arrived here 10 years, and I'm 10 years now at All Saints Parish, I received three other parishes, thanks be to God, just about 2.5 years ago. But when I arrived, I remember it was after a Sunday mass, and there were two guys that came up and they said, "Hey, we're part of this group called the Kingsmen, and we were actually thinking about maybe having a men's conference. What do you think about that?" And I said, "Hey, let's get some beers and talk about Jesus." And that was really the beginning of this men's conference. And we've just been very, very blessed at our parish to have men who want to grow in their faith. And so whether it be through the Kingsmen, whether it be through Exodus 90, whether it be through a program by Chris Stefanik called Rise Up, we have just been blessed with men who are hungry in holiness. At one of my new parishes, there's a confraternity of St. Maximilian Kolbe that just founded this past year. And so men that want to be different than what is being put forth by the world, by the church, and they realize that normal is toxic. And so it's not just the fact that they need to do something for themselves. There's also a desire for them to go out and make a difference in the life of other men, which is what the men's conference specifically, you know, clearly is about. You know, we gather over 1,000 men together. We bring them all from all over the place. When we have our men's conferences, they're very, very selective, those who make the choices of the speakers, to try to make sure that we have some solid Catholic people that people want to come and see, a Dr. Scott Hahn or a Tim Staples. But then we also try to bring in like big NFL players or baseball players or soccer players, so that people who are on the fringes are going to come and hopefully have that conversion experience. So there's a hunger to actually bring more men into a movement of making the decision to actually live their life for Christ. So I live in a blessed area. I'll just say that it's fantastic.
Absolutely. And obviously you've contributed to that as well. I know you wouldn't take credit for it, but I think you came into a good situation, it sounds like, and had some, good structure there. But what you've built up, over the years, I've always been really impressed and have told obviously many people about All Saints and the work that you do. And I think that's in no, small part to who you are as a man and your embrace of fatherhood and masculinity yourself. What do you think, how have you grown, maybe even since you started the conference, but even just over your years as a priest, how do you feel like you've grown as a man? And what do you think has been most fundamental to you understanding what it means to be a good man? Because that's something that I've been wondering, and exploring, I guess. And I think that Seeking Excellence is kind of a culmination and a continued, exposure of my process, of my learnings, of what it means to be a good man. And so what for you has been kind of the most fundamental in understanding what manhood is?
Yeah, so I think I'm very blessed because, I am a priest and I have the opportunity to, thanks be to God, to go on a yearly retreat, to spend time in contemplative prayer every single day and to try to enter into that relationship with the Father. And through that, you begin to quickly realize like, wow, I have my own defects. I have my own deficiencies. I'm a broken man. Even though I might want to say that I have things together, like I don't. So I think for me, my process has been just the recognition of my own self through prayer, through spiritual direction. And then once you realize the wounds that you have, you want to go out and make a difference. You want to help other men. You want to stop the cycle from happening. And so just from my own acknowledgement and my own looking at the brokenness in our world, the brokenness in the church, like you want to help, you want to make a difference. And so I would just say that would be kind of like my own formation is the recognition of my own lack And that Christ has to make up for that. And then in that as well, the desire to go out and change the world, to make things better so that others don't have to suffer and live in the brokenness that seems to be really just accepted now as normative. Like the craziness of our world is that our world is not just, our world is literally saying, oh, you're broken. Oh, you're sick. Okay, well, let's endorse that. Let's endorse your sickness. Let's endorse your toxicness instead of saying, hey, no, actually God designed you for something more. And so yeah, men's movements are powerful. And the reality is, and you've had some podcasts recently about this, but men are leaders. Men were made that way. And so if we want to change the church, if we want things to go in a good direction, we need men who are willing to lead. And so I'm willing to invest it.
Yeah, it's super important. And I think, you know, the church in my experience has become so feminized in so many different ways. I think there's obviously some of that could be controversial or that we could debate and discuss in ways that that's happened, whether that be in the liturgy or just the style of the churches, in the leadership. I think one of the worst things, I actually have a podcast that I recorded that I think you're really going to enjoy that's coming out in the next few weeks, that is kind of was started by this video that I saw, Avadi Bachman, who's a, and I always say his name wrong, I think, but he's a big black Protestant pastor and huge dude. He's awesome. He's very direct. And he has this video that went viral that was him talking about just the what he calls the 11th commandment, thou shalt be nice. And he says basically what we've told to men and told to Christian men over the years is like, you have to be feminine. You have to be nice. You can't ever offend people and things like that. And I've seen that just kind of move in the church in general, right? I think we often get frustrated. I think speaking for the lay people, we get frustrated sometimes with the bishops who aren't willing to come out and say things that are bold, that are true, that are clear, right? We recently had some debatably confusing stuff coming from the Vatican. What do you think are the ways that we can help, and maybe men's conferences or even just men's ministry or us as just men as priests or laymen can help to reestablish masculinity within the church? How do we kind of bring that back?
If I can make a distinction here, which I think will be helpful and beneficial. So as a priest, I am called to be Christ, which means that I am called to be the head. And in that, I am called to teach, I am called to proclaim, I'm called to protect, I'm called to defend, I'm called to be a warrior for my people. Okay. With that, we think about the masculine virtues. We think about me being father. At the same time, as a priest, I'm also then called to be the church. When people come to me and their mom dies, they don't want me telling them about how their mom was in an adulterous relationship or how their mom, was broken. When people come to me and, you know, it's at a point of death or suicide or depression, or they just want someone to help pay their phone bill, they don't want someone to be preaching to them. And so I think, so the church is feminine. The church is mother. The church is bride. And so I think just important, these distinctions, right? We as men who are members of the church have to have feminine virtue of receptivity, of openness, of nurturing. Because when people come to us as a member of the church, they want us in many ways to be the bride, to be the woman in that sense, because we're baptized Christians, members of the mystical body of Christ. However, we cannot negate the fact that I am called to be the lion from the tribe of Judah, and I am called to be Christ, that eternal high priest, who also flipped over tables, stormed the temple, told the Pharisees and the Sadducees that they were whitewashed tombs. So I think making that distinction can sometimes help. There clearly has been a sense where men, priests, have seen themselves as I am the visible sign of the church, to the negation of the fact that I am also called to be Christ, who is priest, prophet, and king, which means that sometimes I need to say what needs to be said. I need to say it with clarity. I need to say it with certainty. And I think, I don't know if that distinction helps, but to me, that's been really, really interesting, even in my own priesthood, of no, I have to warn my people. I need to prepare my people. I need to teach my people. And that means that I'm not always going to be nice. But you want to know what? When someone comes to me and their mom has died, I'm going to be the most compassionate and loving person in the whole entire world. When someone comes to me and their child has an eating disorder or their child has left the faith, like, no, that's when I am the image of Mother Church, because that's what they're here to see. But it's that distinction, which I think is very, very helpful. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it reminds me of something. I can never remember if it was you or Father Chase that told me this, but I think you guys would both be okay with me attributing it to the other. But one of you told me about basically thinking about masculine virtues and feminine virtues. We often wrongly think about them being on a spectrum and opposite ends of each other, when we should actually think about them as being on their own scale, that they're actually more of their own scale, right? And we can grow in the masculine virtues. We can grow in the feminine virtues. They don't have to detract from one another. We can actually be strong in both of them.
Yes, I agree. And in fact, it's a question that those are the questions that I try to ask myself. Like, am I being the man that I'm called to be? And then am I also calling to be, am I being the image of Christ's church? But it all has to happen. It all has to happen. Yeah. And it often happens actually all within one day. I'm having to be both really boldfully. And that's where, I'm not making excuses, but I understand why it's so easy for not just priests, but any man who's trying to live their Christian faith to just side with one side and not the other. And you end up with the mess that we're in.
I can imagine it's especially hard as a priest to do that, because you don't have the wife to lead on, right? At least within our home, like, Emily can be that more natural one. When Jordan does fall over and hit his head, he does more naturally lean to wanting to go to Emily. And when he wants a rough house, you know, or be tossed in the air, that's when he's crawling over to me. And so for us, I think in married life, you can see the complementarity of husband and wife there. Doesn't mean that a husband can or a father can be just totally cold and expect the mom to do all of that, right? The father still has to nurture and everything as well. But and similarly, I think even within the church, for priests, you do have you know, elder women and women of the church that are there to help when somebody dies, right? When somebody loses a loved one or is going through tragedy, there are still women in the church that they can go to.
And I think, in seminary, they used to talk about, a lion from the pulpit and a lamb in the confessional. That image that to proclaim, to preach, to teach, to instruct, to admonish the sinner. Let's not forget, that's one of the spiritual works of mercy, is admonishing the sinner. Like, I need to call out sin. Yep. Father Hallowell and I, we both preached a homily both of us this weekend on gossip. And it was a pretty strong message. Like, we're going to tell you, like, this, like, it's very clear in St. Paul's letter to the Corinthians and to the Galatians, like, gossip, you will be cast out of heaven. Like, the door of heaven is closed to gossipers and slanderers. And so, like, there's that aspect of teaching, preaching, but then there's also the fact of, okay, I need to be full of compassion, full of mercy, full of love, particularly when sinners come to me. They need that mercy. They need, when someone comes and confesses abortion to you, and someone confesses adultery to you, when someone confesses whatever is going on in their lives, like, no, I'm here now to be the Christ. And I'm here to receive you in a beautiful way. So yeah, that duality is clearly there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, leaning into one side or the other, right? Leaning especially into I would say exclusively into the feminine virtues or to the masculine virtues. I think we've seen a lot, obviously, lean into explicitly or exclusively the feminine virtues. A lot of the church leaders, a lot of Catholics, a lot of Christians in general have done this. And I think it's led to this feminization of the church and led to this message that we see in this article that I want to discuss with you today. Now, Seeking Excellence listeners have heard me reference this before, this article on the Catholic Gentleman written by Jason Craig, that is titled Catholic Churches to Men, You're Not Welcome Here. And he kind of gives four main points. Now, I wanted to ask you your thoughts on each of these four and just kind of break them down and go into each one of them, because it's hard to tell with some of these if it's a response and like fruit of us choosing exclusively to care about the feminine virtues or if it is, what caused it, what caused us to do that. It's hard to tell you. It's kind of a chicken or the egg thing. I think some of these negative impacts we're seeing of men leaving the church, the horrible stats that we have on Catholic men when it comes to embracing the faith and living out their faith, And we're seeing disassociation from the Catholic Church at younger and younger ages as time progresses, and the problem doesn't seem to be fixing itself. But I think Jason lays out at least four of the issues here, four of the problems that we have. And the first one that he gives is there's no challenge. And so this kind of goes back to what you just talked about of being a lion from the pulpit. And I think that I've experienced this, right? I remember going to certain things, or even I remember being at a retreat when I was at Mount St. Mary's University. And I'm fairly certain, I don't want to say who it was because some people might know, but it was a priest that was working at the seminary. And so he was an experienced and like senior priest. And he came on our retreat and he basically told us that masturbation for you know, teenage or college age guys, like, wasn't that serious of a sin. He's like, you guys are all struggling with this. It's like, we know this. And he's like, it's just, you know, there's kind of sins that he was basically saying, you know, and you could debate this or push back on this if you want to, but he was talking about how like mortal sins like kind of varies, and was basically giving a lot of context towards it and saying that you don't have to really consider it a mortal sin given your state of life. And I just remember hearing things like that over the years, where it's basically making Christianity easier, which I think is what a lot of Protestantism, especially evangelicalism, has done over time. And I see the church drifting towards, or already has drifted towards that, right? And has tried to do that as well. And just basically tried to make Catholicism and Christianity, make it all easier. We reduce the levels of requirements. We reduce the things that are difficult that we have to do, from fasting to expecting prayers or whatever. And just everything just becomes easier and easier. How have you seen this issue of not challenging in your own life? And what do you think we can do about it? How do we start to challenge men again?
Yeah. So some of you might know, I coach cross country and track at the local public high school. And I'm using that just solely as an example, but imagine like going to your first football practice or baseball practice or volleyball practice or swim practice, and the coach is saying like, hey, you want to know what? We're not really going to work out this season. We're just going to kind of let things happen. And we're just going to hope that you become excellent by you just, you know, just being here within itself. Being here is enough. And no one is going to take that coach as being a credible coach. The credible coach is going to be the individual who wants nothing but excellence for the individual and knows the exact way to guide them to that excellence. And that excellence will always come about through struggle, through suffering, through hard work, but also with a trust in the coach that the coach knows what's actually best for me. And I think that's a great question. Like, is that happening? Like, I was having a conversation earlier today with about just priestly leadership in parishes. And a question I think that we can ask, the question is like, is my parish being led by a father, by a coach, or do I have a babysitter? You and Emily both know that when you have a babysitter and you leave for the night, your only hope is that something bad doesn't happen. There's no desire in your heart that like, wow, when I get back, like Jordan's going to be speaking Latin and know algebraic equations right. And he's going to be walking and like he knows he's potty trained now. Like my babysitter potty trained my child. Like, no. And I think that is, sadly, I think when we look at like what are parish assignments and how do we assign priests and how do we, I think there is also like, how do we just keep things there? Like, how do we just keep the parish from shutting down and not the question of like, are we flourishing? Are we growing? And so there has to be the challenge. The challenge has to be there. Like, we believe in metanoia, conversion, renewal. All of that is change. And so change doesn't happen. To go from point A to point B, you have to go through a transition. Transition is messy. Transition is hard. And so, yeah, it's a question that I ask myself every week when I'm preparing my homily, when I'm preparing my sermons, like, how is this going to mess with people's lives? How is this going to shake people up? How is this going to make things challenging? Always like in a positive way to bring them to virtue. But that, you know, I think that has to be the constant question, not just like, what's the nice little thing that I'm going to say that's going to make them feel good about themselves? Yeah. And I also think like with that, like, I think it's really hard for people to like, sometimes you can even say like something good that you think is challenging. But I think that even just in today's world, like it needs to be spelled out. Like, here's the two things I'm asking you to change in your life today. I think it's very, very hard when people are bent, you know, holding on to their kids and annoyed by the person next to them or frustrated or like, here's the challenge today. Like, I need you to go home and pray about these two things, right? Like, Jesus mm-hmm. is looking for this, you know, and inviting you to this into your life. So yeah, challenge is huge. We all need it. Every single one of us. The gospel is radically challenging. You know, go and sell all your possessions and then come follow me. That's pretty challenging. So
yeah, obviously, you know, a lot of men are lacking it. We can't force the our pastors or our priests to give us challenging homilies, you know? And so I'm thinking for the guys that are out there, feel like they're by themselves, feel like they're, you know, the parishes, I think, especially true for probably people in the South, but people who feel like they go, all the parishes around them kind of have, you know, very lukewarm preaching, kind of lukewarm Catholicism. I've always admired for you being out there in the middle of nowhere, right? Being out there where you lose service to go to the rectory. How did you, especially when you were by yourself, how do you challenge yourself when you're alone, right? You were the only priest in, I don't know how many miles, in a how many mile radius, but you were the only priest out there. How did you challenge yourself and then hold yourself accountable to try to continue to grow and to continue to be better when maybe you feel like you're by yourself, maybe a guy that doesn't feel like he has good friends, and again, doesn't feel like he's getting good spiritual development from his parish?
Okay, so you just like launched into a topic that you and I should, we should have a podcast about this. I mean this for real. I'm trying to write about this right now, actually. Iron sharpens iron. Brothers sharpen brothers. This is why we need a men's conference, because men need to be with men, because men call each other to excellence. It's very, very hard if you're into bodybuilding, if you want to run a marathon, to do it on your own. Men need men. Priests need priests. Brothers need brothers. So the question is, if I am by myself, I still need another. Now, in a pious sense, I can say, well, I have Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament, and I do. Okay? So like, what's my relationship with that, with Jesus, a person? But also, a habit that I developed early on, thanks be to God, was I would call three priests every single day and talk to three priests on the phone about what was happening in their priesthood, what was happening in their parish, because I refused to live my priesthood in isolation. And that was just a huge game changer for me, because I live in the country and I travel back and forth between parishes. Like, I have time in my car. I have, and the priest that I call, like, we all know, like, whenever I arrive or they arrive at their destination, like, the conversation ends. But I'm not going to live in isolation. I'm not going to live in loneliness. I'm not, like, I need to hear what they're doing. I need them to tell me. And Father Chase is actually, you know, a true bro. Like, Father Chase oftentimes would call me up. He'd be listening to my homilies and then would, like, give me feedback on my homily right away, or tell me that, hey, I'm stealing your homily. Thank you so much, bro. I really appreciate that. He would call me and tell me about something that happened in vocations. And through that, I would then implement in my parish and call him back and affirm him. Like, the Lone Ranger mentality is toxic. And so in your own, like, if you're a layman out there, if you're a husband out there, if you're a father out there, you don't have to live alone. If you feel like you're the only guy out there, this is the new world that we live in, right? We have the ability through, this is a community right here, right? I mean, Seeking Excellence is a community. Like, you're not alone, mm-hmm. because you're listening to this podcast with other guys, and you have the ability to know that there's other guys out there fighting with you and fighting for you. And so, I think just, we have to choose community. It's not an option. It's an essential aspect to anybody who wants to be excellent.
Absolutely. Yeah, you need it. And I think guys just need to recognize that. You know, I think one thing that is often missed when I've talked to men who have felt like they're in this position, and some do this, so I don't want to, you know, negate that fact, but a lot of them just don't pray for it. I think we have to pray for it, and we have to be intentional about trying to build it.
You're totally killing it right there. You have to pray for it. And when I was a young priest, I struggled really, really hard, and I wanted brothers. And so I accepted a group of brothers early in my priesthood, and they were toxic. Like, it was bad. Like, I thought they were brothers. I thought they were friends, but they weren't. And it was negative and they brought me down. But I kept saying, like, I need brothers. I need brothers. And it actually was, it was bad for me. I remember, like, talking to my spiritual director and he said, you need to just pray and you need to wait. And so I prayed and I prayed and I waited. And God heard those prayers and he answered those prayers. And, yeah, when I look at my life now, like the fraternity that I have with true bros, and I mean that for real, like true brothers, like I am so blessed. So blessed. But you gotta pray, awesome. And you gotta wait.
You do. And I think, you know, when I moved here to Denver, I didn't have good guy friends for a long time. Couldn't find good male friends. And I knew that I needed it, prayed about it, attempted a couple different men's groups that just weren't good fits and just kept praying about it and gave them good, you know, good time. I think a lot of times we don't give things a chance, right? You can get discouraged and dejected because you've gone to one and it's like that didn't really click. But I think continue to pray about it, continue to hope for it. And then it was like in a short couple of months, it was like in a 5-month period that I've met really now all of my best guy friends here in Denver and feel like I have an abundance, feel like we've made good couple friends that are in the same stages of life as us. But that first year was just very lonely here. And I didn't feel like I super developed it when I was in Cincinnati, just cause I was traveling and stuff so much. Same thing. Kansas was very transient. We weren't there very long. And so it was a several year period where I did have to, similar to what you're talking about, be more intentional with phone calls and staying in touch with previous, you know, just staying close to previous friends or friends from previous phases of my life. I shouldn't say previous or past friends, but friends from past phases of my life. And I think you do a really good job of that. I've always been really grateful for that. I love getting the spontaneous Father Meyer phone calls and calling you spontaneously as well. So I think it's really, really big to just set those commitments to calling people one a day. You know, you say you do 3 a day, I think one a day or one a week, even just trying to reach out to your homies and making sure that you're staying connected.
Amen.
All right. So the next one he talks about here is emasculated organizational culture. And the good example that he gives here is he talks about a friend of his that wanted to send a catechism to every Protestant pastor in his area. And he said he wrote a very friendly letter explaining that it seems that many people are confused about what the church actually teaches and that this might help clear up some misconceptions and open up dialogue. And he was basically inviting them to learn more about Catholicism. And he says the idea was shut down because it might be offensive to some people. And he says this quote here that I really liked. He said, "We'd often rather leave 99 lost sheep behind to recover the one offended sheep. And men experience these things and see it as hypocritical because challenging people to the new evangelization and then tying their hands is giving them a burden they cannot bear." And so I've experienced this even in my own life of trying to do things. Or I remember I wanted to start a men's group at a parish that I was at when I was at Fayetteville, North Carolina, when I was still in the Army. And the pastor came back to me and he said, "Okay, but we need to know exactly like what you're going to be doing and you need to have a plan." This is after I'd been volunteering in youth ministry and become friends with the parochial vicar over several months. And so I knew the deacon well, I knew the parochial vicar well. And the pastor says, "You need to have more information." He would never meet with me directly to ask me about what I wanted to teach or go over, what book of the Bible I was going to study. But I had a group of men, many of whom were rough, were outside the church, that were open and wanting to commit. And I said, "We just want to meet here at the parish. I don't have another place for us to meet. We need to meet at the parish." And he said, "Create a plan." So I create this like document. I have PowerPoint slides, printouts. I give them all this stuff of what I'm going to do. And they're just like, "Not right now, maybe later." Month later, come back. "No, not right now, maybe later." And eventually I just gave up and we never did it. And who knows the fruits that would have come from that. But I just think it's another example of just like, we're never willing to take risks. We're never willing to do anything. And obviously you don't want somebody teaching heresy right within the parish walls, but I think a simple conversation with me could have help him to understand that that was not my intention and not my goal. But I think so often we just see these constant roadblocks, this bureaucracy that exists at the diocesan level, my God, would make you want to pull your eyes out of your face. But bureaucracy, dioceses, parishes that can be so difficult to get these things going, that I think does just kind of represent an emasculated organizational culture. But how have you seen this? What do you think we can do about it?
Yeah, I mean, so I just think about the fact like we're at war. Like we're at war with the culture, we're at war with mediocrity, we're at war with what's happening, and we just constantly hesitate. We're constantly hesitating because you know, we, and I'm being a little bit dramatic, but like we sit in a circle and we talk about ourselves instead of having our eyes focused on the battle. And I remember newly ordained priest, this is 20 years ago, I was made the diocesan director of youth ministry, and where I would have my leadership meetings with other members of the diocese, we would sit at a small table, and literally in the center of a table was a pottery candle holder of people holding hands. And in the center of the people holding the hands was a candle. And that was us. Like, we sat around and we talked about ourselves, and we weren't outward focused on like what is happening in our culture and our world that needs to be attacked, that we need to be engaging in and confronting with to bring the gospel into. And I know as a priest, and you know, I mean this, like, praise God, like praise the Lord for the people that have been like placed into my priesthood that are like, you want to know what? There's a problem with masculinity. There's a problem in the world. Let's found a men's conference. Hey, it's COVID-19 and our kids can't go to Steubenville. Let's found a youth conference called Intense, where we'll have kids stay in tents and encounter Jesus in the Eucharist, because we don't know what's going to happen in the midst of COVID. And so, hey, we don't think there's enough community and relationships in our local area. Hey, let's found a coffee shop, because we need a Catholic coffee shop in our local area so people can have Bible studies and people can actually spend quality time with each other. Like, if all we do is sit around and look at each other, we aren't going to act and we aren't going to move forward. And there clearly is this struggle for people. I actually, the story that you just told, there's a high school kid that I coached in Jennings County, and he's called me because he's joined a parish and he's communicated with the pastor multiple times about wanting to start a men's group, and he's gotten nothing in response. And he called me up again. He's like, hey, Father, can I come to E6 having men's conference? Because I'm going to come and I'm going to try to bring some guys, but like, it's been really, really hard. I feel like it's roadblock. In the meantime, of course, we know like the family's falling apart. Men are struggling. Men are in loneliness. There's depression. I mean, we can go on and on and on of all the things, but like, what are we doing? Like, what we need to turn around, get out of our circle, and realize it's a battle. Like, Matthew Kelly talks about like that image of like, if there is a broken sewer pipe in your family room, you would fix it right away. You wouldn't like form a committee and get a bunch of people together and talk about like, what's the way to get, like, you would stop the sewage coming into your house right at this very moment. Like, things are messed up right now. And what are we doing? And correct, there are times where you need to like be very slow, right? And strategic, but there's also a lot that just needs to happen. And men don't want to sit around a table and talk for hours about what we could be doing. They want to just go out and do something. They want to be a part of something. They want to fix something. They want to build something. And we need to act. So yeah, we don't want to get into Mel Robbins, but Mel Robbins' 5-second rule is clearly what I base much of my priesthood decisions off of, and for the most part it's been a great blessing in my own life. So you got to act, you got to move. You can't sit around and just talk. You got
to
move.
Yeah, the sewage example is really great. I'm gonna have to steal that. That's, I think, so important to understand, just the speed at which we move. We definitely don't seem like we're in wartime. You know, I think the military can be a great example to us for that, where the military is very bureaucratic. It can be really slow, but when you are actually in battle, when you need things to happen, there's a different level of urgency that exists, right? You give framework to people, you give them guidelines, you give them rules of engagement, but you have to let people operate in order to actually achieve and to win. And I want to really talk to you about the third point he gives here, which is horrible mass experiences. And I don't know if there's anybody that I know that is more worked up by horrible mass experiences. Actually, that's not true. There's probably people that I know that are more worked up by it.
There are a lot.
But I don't know that I don't know that I know a priest that is more intentional and in love with creating beautiful mass experiences than you. And so tell me a little bit about your journey there, because I doubt, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I doubt that you were taught in seminary to do mass the way that mass is done at All Saints Parish. And so tell us a little bit about how mass is done at All Saints Parish. Maybe I'm wrong about that. You can correct me, but tell me about how mass is done and how you, if you've evolved over the years in, or changed, maybe evolved, it seems prideful, but if you've changed over the years in the way that you've wanted mass to be done at your parishes, how have you changed it, and what drew you to the place that you're at now?
Yeah. So, I came from a place where I was not, I think it's just so interesting. You know, I'm 47 years old. I'm 20 years a priest. And so we have to also realize like where things were at 20 years ago. Like for all of you, you know, young people out there, like things were really, 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 really bad. Like I remember at my first mass, like telling some other of my like seminarian friends, like all I can control is what's on the white corporal in front of me, because there were big glass pitchers of wine that were on the altar that were then poured into glass glasses and distributed to the people, because that's what happened at my parish and the celebration of mass. And so just things were really, really bad. Like we forget how bad things were in the 1980s and 90s and 70s when I was raised. So when I was in seminary, I began reading the documents of the church, and I was just like, none of this matches up with what I'm seeing. Like I'm confused on why what this says isn't being actualized. And I know that there's this, you know, of course, like clearly there's this big, you know, drive now towards the TLM. And for me, it was just always a question of like, well, aren't we going to at least try to first maybe actually do what the documents say before we all like jump on abandoned the TLM bandwagon? Like who's actually trying to say, have we done this yet before we leave? And so for me, it was, I just felt very convicted when I was in seminary to say like, I'm going to be a priest who's just trying to implement what was never implemented. And, so prior to COVID, like Father Hollowell and I, we wrote this document, like 27 things that priests, that every priest could do right now to make the mass more reverent without celebrating the TLM. And it was all of these things like the average parish, like tabernacle veils and chalice veils and using incense at all the proper times and wearing proper vestments and, you know, all of these things, chanting the entire mass, the use of Latin, like these are all things that any priest could do today. Any of them could do today. And so I've just tried to, I mean, really, I would just say that's been like the anthem of my priesthood is like, I just am trying to actually live the Second Vatican Council. I'm just trying to implement what is actually in the actual text. In doing so, you know, if you do that, then it turns out that mass is actually pretty, pretty amazing. And, you know, it does attract, like I have found over my experiences that men are attracted, but not just men, but reverence is beautiful, right? Young people love reverence. They love reverence. They love consistency. And those are things that clearly were nowhere present. And I mean that. I'm just like, they weren't present in my experience of the mass as a young person being raised in the 70s and 80s. Every week was something different and new and innovative and reverent. It was about us. It really was. It was about us focusing more on us. So anyways, it's really been beautiful. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, in All Saints Parish, not just All Saints Parish, but now all of Dearborn County, because our liturgy really has become very cohesive across the entire county, any of the seven churches, you know, you see well-trained servers, and there's lots of them, sometimes over 20, and we chant the entire mass, and we use incense every single Sunday at every single mass. You know, mass is celebrated with great execution and intentionality, and music is reverent. And so all of those things that you would expect to be there hopefully are there. Now, I just want to say this, like, I'm not, you know, I would love to see more. Like, I'm not saying that I'm done. It's not me when I say I'm done, but like, there's still things that can be continued to be perfected for God's praise, for God's glory. Yeah, I do think that for most people, the way that mass is celebrated is not very edifying or attractive. If we really think about what's taking place and the fact that it is the representation of Calvary, like Calvary itself is being placed for us, on the altar. And that's a really, really, really big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's huge. I often tell people that, All Saints Parish has what I think is the best Novus Ordo I've ever experienced. I think the Lord's
that's
here
a very
in Denver,
big
which
claim,
I,
by the way,
it is. Well, I mean, you don't know how it's many Novus Ordos I've seen. I might have only seen really bad ones, so it still could be like, you know, a 6 out of 10, but be the best one I've seen. So I'm a limited person, but I have been to mass in probably 20 some different states and seen many Novus Ordos actually. But during my travels and things like that. But I think, you know, parishes like Lord's here in Denver, we get close to it. But I think that I just love the way that you do it. It's my favorite in the world. But one of the things that you do really well, and I want to ask about, this brings us to our fourth point here, which is parishes have no brotherhood, is the altar boys. I don't know if I've ever asked you about your reasoning for why you only have male altar servers. Is that something that's in Vatican II documents, or is that something that is more some that you have other reasons for? Why do you do that? And tell us a little bit about altar boys and the culture you've created with the altar boys, for whom I have great affection and love.
Yeah, so just for those of you who have never been to All Saints Parish or any of the churches in Dearborn County, because the altar boys are now all in Dearborn County across
everywhere.
The board. But the altar boys is a group. That's what we call our altar servers. So it's altar boys with a Z. Just remember that, okay? Altar boys with a Z. And they're actually, this is going to be really crazy. My sister, who just got married, by the way, on December 29th. My sister's a professional dance choreographer. She works with young people across the country. And anyways, so there was actually an off-Broadway musical called The Altar Boys, B-O-Y-Z. That's where I got the name from. And I just liked the name, and they had, anyways, so that's where I originally got the name, because we used to call them Men in Black in my first two parishes. We called them Men in Black. But it's just the idea that there's a document called Redemptio Sacramentum that came out. This is in the days of Pope Benedict XVI. And it was a document that was to make corrections from things that were going bad in the liturgy. And it put out a reminder about the importance of having young men at the altar. And I took that as just a great endorsement to realize that this is where priestly vocations come from, but not just priestly vocations. This is like, if you just have to ask yourself the questions, like in the majority of parishes across our country, when you go to Mass on Sunday, if there is a server, it normally is, there might be two, maybe three, they're scheduled. The priest or the sacristans before Mass are frantically trying to find servers coming out into the congregation and, you know, pulling kids, begging them to come back. And I have just found that if you create a fraternity, number one, you never have to, so we don't have a schedule. There's never a schedule. One less thing for my staff to do. But it also then creates memories and experiences and genuinely a brotherhood. So just like last Sunday, I was processing out of Mass and there were 20 servers at Mass. And I got to the back of the church and there were a bunch of altar boys alumni. And so these are all the bros that they technically can no longer serve because they graduated from high school. And I turned to one of the sacristans, someone who sets up for Mass, who's in the back of the church. I'm like, look at this altar boys graveyard back here. I'm like, all these boys back here, like they wish they were still, that they were still able to serve. And it was something really, really beautiful. But I mean, like my experience, Nathan, and I, you know, once again, born and raised Catholic, I was an altar server. My brother and I served Mass, but like I had no relationship with these other servers. Like we weren't a brotherhood or a community. We just fulfilled our function on Sunday morning once a month, and then we went home. And so the idea is actually to create a brotherhood. This is, you know, I've learned it, you know, just from my experiences in sports and athletics. But you just look around. Like this is, do we want thriving communities? Do we want, like these are our future men who are going to run our parish festivals, that are going to, you know, be coaching CYO basketball, then coaching CYO football. And these are the men that we want to be involved in our men's group, in our Bible studies. And these are the men that we want to be raising other good men. And so I want to form them now. I don't want to wait until they're having the crisis like later in their life. Like, so creating the fraternity now, and I was like, listen, this is a weekly youth group. The weekly youth group might only be for 5 minutes before Mass, but that's our weekly youth group. And that's the opportunity to just be like, hey, I know every one of my servers by name. I know what school they go to. I know what's happened in their life. And it's not about, I'm not saying like that it's me knowing that. They also know each other and they feel comfortable talking to a priest and they're next to the altar. Like I always just say that as well. Like I want as many young people as possible to be kneeling close to the altar of Jesus Christ. Like why would I not want that? So creating that fraternity aspect is really important, and having that ability for them to have that relationship with Jesus, because then, you know, in the sacristy before Mass, I can talk to them about like, you know, what do you, just a few days ago, before Mass, I asked every I went around the sacristy to ask every single server before Mass, like, what's your Mass intention today? What are you praying for today at Mass? Right? I mean, like, when does that conversation happen? But that opportunity is there to happen, that, and it's happened, you know, in a beautiful way. So anyways, just thankful for all those little opportunities that we have, to make those encounters. So that, anyways, the Altar Boys, we have logos, we have merch, we have gear, we have everything. They have everything, every article of clothing you could imagine, they've been given.
There's swag.
So it's fantastic. Yep. They have more swag than you can imagine.
That's awesome, man. Well, Father, thank you so much. Well, I'm excited to come and experience the Novus Ordo at my favorite Novus Ordo parish in America in just 5 weeks. And so we want to invite people again to the E6 Catholic Men's Conference there in Dearborn County, Indiana at East Central High School. And so we'll both be there, obviously. I'll be giving one of the keynote talks and be there throughout the entire day. And so very excited for it. Father, is there anything else you want to share on that?
No, I just want to encourage you to check us out at E6 Catholic Men's Conference, E6 Catholic Men's Conference. Tim Staples, Sean Casey, my dear friend, Father John Hollowell, who was cured at Lourdes. Nathan, my bro, is going to be the MC for the day. And we're talking 37 days away, my people. So get signed up, get checked in. And I really do hope that you can join us. If you're anywhere in the local area, feel free to fly in. We have a coffee shop, by the way, as well. So Ars Cafe and Meeting House. Ars Cafe is named after St. John Vianney, the curé of Ars. Not a pirate, not Ars like a pirate, more like Ars in France. But there's a lot you can check out. We got four beautiful churches that are right there in the local area. So you can make pious pilgrimages to all of those. It is the National Eucharistic Revival. And it's our bicentennial, 200 years of Catholicism. I mean, so many reasons to come to Dearborn County, besides just to see Nathan. And God bless you.
That's right. Thanks so much, Father. It was great talking with you as always. And we look forward to having you back here on Seeking Excellence.
Peace.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast with my man, Father Jonathan Meyer. He's a hero of mine, one of my good friends, and just an amazing, amazing priest with a heart for God, a heart for other people. And so I want to again invite you to the E6 Catholic Men's Conference. Also want to invite you this summer in June to the Power and Purpose Conference at the Franciscan, at Franciscan University of Steubenville. I'm going to be speaking there as well. Really excited to be giving a breakout session there. And then one of the keynotes on Sunday where I'll be giving my testimony. But it's going to be an amazing conference. I believe we also have Jackie Francois Angel is going to be coming. And so I've never gotten to meet her before. So really excited to be a part of that conference this summer. And last thing I want to invite you to is, of course, to join us on Locals. You can join us at seekingexcellence.locals.com. I'm very excited to announce, not the t-shirt I'm wearing right now, but new t-shirts that are being delivered this week. If you join as a $15 a month or more supporter on Locals, you'll be getting a free t-shirt mailed to you, a free Seeking Excellence t-shirt. So I'll be posting those on Locals here soon so you'll be able to see them. And so for all new supporters, and maybe for some past supporters, if you've been supporting for a while, we might be sending out some free swag here soon. We've got our upcoming book club starting again. I'm thinking we're going to be doing a Lent book club this year, so still finalizing some of the details on that. But we're going to have another book club coming up during Lent and finalizing which book I'm going to do for that. But if you are a $15 a month or more supporter of Seeking Excellence, you'll be getting a free book as well for the Lenten Book Club. So stay tuned for all of that, but join us there. That's where you'll find us. You can also follow me on Instagram at Nathan Crankfield or Seeking Excellence at Seeking Excellence. And then I would also invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel where we post exclusive content that is just for the YouTube audience. One of my most recent videos is Lecrae Becoming Catholic. Got some good views and I'm really excited about that. That was one of my first reaction videos. And so we've got more coming out here soon and excited for all the things we're going to be putting on YouTube this year. So hope you're ready to make 2024 one of the best years of your life. If you're a man in Ohio, Indiana, or Kentucky, expect to see you at E6. God bless you. Continue to fight hard. Be your best.